we have a special offer for Follow the Money listeners on Richard Dennis's new book, Big: The Role of the State in the Modern Economy. Despite decades of rhetoric to the contrary, Richard points out that taxes and government spending don't ruin the economy, they just reshape it. For 20% off Big: The Role of the State in the Modern Economy, just head to publishing.monash.edu, select Big, and enter the discount code AusInstitute20. That discount code again is AUSInstitute20 when you check out Big at publishing.monash.edu. Buy your copy of Big today.
You've got a triage like a hospital. What's the most important thing? You know, the person laying on their face on the floor, or that person needs their morphine injection right now. There's another one dying in another room. We've got multiple things all happening at the same time to have timely answers for. So, yes, we're stressed and stretched on a daily basis in our work, and it gets no easier.
One for Mum, one for Dad, and one for the country.
And there has never been a more exciting time to be an Australian.
Budgets are about choices, Fran, and you show what you value through the choices you make.
Dead, buried, cremated.
This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared.
The Treasurer knows.
Australia's basically done for. We'll just end up being a third-rate economy. You know, a banana republic.
How good is Australia?
Just follow the money.
G'day, and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast that explains big economic issues in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Australia Institute, and today we're bringing you the third episode of a special series we are doing with our Chief Economist Richard Dennis and special guests, based on Richard's new book, Big: The Role of the State in the Modern Economy. In Big, Richard argues it's no coincidence that the democratic contest of big ideas has been replaced by debates about deregulation, costings, modelling, and confected culture wars. In his book Big, and with this special series of Follow the Money episodes, Richard wants to start a national conversation about the shape of government, not just the size of government. So today we're going to have a conversation about how the shape of our society and economy could change if we prioritised aged care funding and reforms.
The Aged Care Royal Commission has delivered shattering findings in its report, calling the sector besieged with neglect.
22 to 50% of people in residential aged care were malnourished. For every 100 residents, as many as 18 had experienced physical or sexual assault.
Now you heard me say crisis, and I know for many Australians that's how it feels. I can tell you that's how it feels for us. But what is more important is that we understand this is the function of a lot of pressure on the system.
Our aged care nurses and workers are holding the system together as best they can, but they've got virtually nothing left. This is a crisis that should have never, ever been allowed to happen.
Opposition Leader Anthony Albanese has announced a $2.5 billion commitment to improve the standard of care for residents and working conditions for staff.
We know if we want to recruit and retain more carers to look after a population that's growing older, we need to treat their vital and essential work with respect and reward it with better pay.
It's not that long since the Royal Commission into Aged Care Quality and Safety handed down its findings, describing Australia's aged care system as a shocking tale of neglect that needs a complete overhaul and not just patching up. Peter Rosen, QC, told the Royal Commission, quote, "It can be seen that the aged care system we have in 2020 is not a system that is failing, it is the system operating as it was designed to operate, and we should not be surprised at the results." That is to say, it's a system designed to maximise profits first, not put care first. So to unpack this topic in more detail, I'm delighted to introduce our special guest today for that conversation, Richard Dennis, Chief Economist of the Australia Institute and author of Big: The Role of the State in the Modern Economy. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Eb.
Annie Butler, Federal Secretary of the Australian Nurses and Midwifery Federation. Hello, Annie.
Hi, Ebony.
And Irene McInerney, a registered nurse who works in residential aged care in Tasmania. Thanks for joining us, Irene.
My pleasure.
So, Annie Butler, if I can start with you first, I just want to go back to the Royal Commission because it wasn't that long ago and it kind of, I think, was very shocking for a lot of people. Would you mind just giving us a kind of big picture idea of some of the issues with the aged care sector that that Royal Commission uncovered?
Yeah, thanks very much, Ebony, and thanks for the invitation. Look, unfortunately for nurses, midwives and care workers across the country, the Royal Commission didn't reveal to us things that we didn't already know. We've known about the problems in the sector for a decade, probably two decades, and we can pinpoint when the decline really started to occur. That might be pertinent to some of Richard's discussion with the introduction of the Aged Care Act in 1997, which just rapidly increased privatisation across the sector. With the Royal Commission, though, what it did do was, while distressing for many residents themselves and for relatives' families, and it did uncover and lay bare the consequences of some of those changes to how the system operates in terms of what you already outlined, just abject neglect. It also identified that the workforce is not the problem. In fact, getting the sector right, the workforce is the key factor. It absolutely recognised that there are many ingredients across the aged care sector that need to be addressed to ensure we have a safe quality sector. But it said, unless you get the workforce right, essentially nothing else matters. What the fundamental problems are is that we need enough staff with the right skills, with enough time to care. And so if we interpret what that means for nurses and care workers across the sector, what we need is we want minimum guaranteed staffing levels and skills mix. We need registered nurses 24 hours a day in every nursing home across the country. We need to make sure that people are paid fairly. So there's a huge pay disparity, especially for registered nurses, between working in a public hospital, public sector, and even private hospitals to working in aged care facilities. And then finally, what we absolutely need is legislated transparency and accountability measures. The sector is heavily government subsidised. About 80% of funds come from taxpayers' funds. Taxpayers rightly assume that their money is going towards the provision of quality, safe and quality care, and just in too many instances it's not. So we need a guarantee that every dollar of taxpayers' money goes directly to the provision of quality, safe care for every older Australian. And our position from the ANMF is that until we get those things right, it doesn't matter what else we do tinkering around the edges, we're not going to fix the problems in aged care.
Irene, if I can come to you next, you work in residential aged care as a nurse. Annie's just talked about there that for anyone working in the sector, you know, the Royal Commission didn't come as a shock or a surprise. What is it like in your experience as a nurse working in residential aged care? Do you see those problems and encountering them in your working life?
Oh, yes. Good afternoon. Unfortunately, it's happening each and every shift. I can relate to every last statement that Annie said. I felt like I was nodding my head constantly. And it's, so I'm one of those people that's got the acumen and the true caring, and I just want justice in these places for the staff and for the resident. And I'm finding more and more, like, if I'm going to go to work and almost dread what sort of day I'm going to have, I mean, that says something huge, because I've got decades of experience. And when I go to work each day, I try to make a difference in the lives of the residents. But there's so many constraints, and we're time poor for lack of staff, that it just weighs on you, because you're apologising for not giving timely care. You're putting off one thing to see to somebody else. It's almost like, you know, the squeakiest wheel gets fixed. You want to do well for everybody, not just fix the loud in your face problems, put other people off. But every shift I could come home and debrief and do a recording on here of all the things that could have gone better. It just comes down to not enough skills with a lot of the staff we have now, And they're expecting a lot more of us senior RNs, if you like, which I feel I am at my particular facility. We're just trying to have an answer for so many things, and it weighs on us more and more as time goes on.
Mm. And in terms of it weighing on you, you know, that seems like a pretty heavy burden. And as you said, you know, you don't want to be dreading going to work every day. You've kind of talked about the impact on you as someone who's trying to provide that care. But obviously it impacts residents as well. You know, you want to wanting to provide the best care to all of them. And you're saying, you know, there's some people you might not get to in a timely fashion.
Yes, well, I've stayed in this, what I feel, for the long haul, because I want to see government fix this problem. So I go in there knowing I'm making a difference to the residents because I love my job and my role so much. But really, it just comes down to just how much have we got in the end. Like, things need to get sorted out sooner rather than later. I've seen some of my really good colleagues leaving. I go to work making this best a difference as I can, because I've got knowledge and skills that, yeah, I've even had family members say, why aren't you doing something else? Because I'm determined to really stick at this, no matter how much the burden seems, to be there, to be a part of the solution. You know, the residents deserve so much better. They're vulnerable. They're coming in with a lot more complex needs. They need people like myself or any of us that really truly care and want to just try and make a difference in their lives. Just even with the basics of day to day can be difficult to meet.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Richard, I mean, that just sounds awful, kind of dreading to going to work every day. Australia's public spending on aged care is much lower than other industrial countries. That was part of what the Royal Commission found. And how significant is that kind of lack of resources that everyone is working with in the sector?
Oh, well, as you've just heard, it is the problem. I mean, you know, we talk about things like the aged care sector, the aged care system, but of course, what we're talking about is a whole bunch of people, humans, providing care to other humans. Sure, it takes place in a building. Yes, there's equipment used. But the main thing, the main resource that we use to provide aged care is aged care workers. And if there's not enough of them, and if they're not well trained enough, then they can't possibly provide the services that I think the community expects, that the medical profession assumes is being provided, and that frankly just provide dignity, but not just dignity, some happiness to some people who have gone into aged care because that was deemed to be the best place for them. So it'd be fascinating to hear from Irene about, you know, the kinds of things that that individual patients are missing out on because of this. But it's we just have to really look at this quite simply. If there's not enough staff there to provide high quality service, then people will get low quality service. Mm. And the Aged Care Commission has spelled out what the consequences are. You know, some of the terrible ways that some people have suffered in aged care because of a lack of treatment. And until we've got enough staff there to fix it, we're not going to fix it. And everything else is just pretense. Mm. That's a really important point.
And obviously the government, you know, plays a huge role in subsidising aged care. So it has a huge role to play here as a funder. But as your book points out, we've had kind of decades of saying public spending is more or less a bad thing. Mm. And this is a sector that's been privatised as well. How much do those kinds of issues come into the way that we're talking about solving this issue now?
Look, yeah, it's key. And look, there's two different problems here. There's the amount of money that government spends, which is not enough, and then there's the way that it spends it. And some aged care centres in Australia are owned by governments. Some are owned and run by not-for-profits, and some are owned by for-profit private companies. And there's no doubt, and the Royal Commission found this, that the outcomes, the performance of the government-owned ones is superior. And the most clearest evidence of this was what happened when COVID hit. So we've got two problems from the sort of role of the state kind of point of view. One, we're terrified in Australia of collecting a bit more tax and spending a bit more money. Australia's one of the lowest tax countries in the developed world. If we wanted to collect some more tax and spend it on services like this, people's lives would be improved. We can afford $15 billion for the Stage 3 tax cuts that come in 2 years' time, $15 billion delivering $9,000 a year tax cuts for people earning over $200,000. We can afford that, but we tell ourselves we, quote, can't afford to follow the aged care recommendations. But again, even if the government was spending more money, we've got to look at the how they're spending it. Because simply giving public money to private enterprise in the hope that they will spend it on nursing, in the hope that they'll spend it on good food, in the hope that they will prioritise the care of the patients rather than the profits for their shareholders, well, hope is not a strategy, and the Royal Commission made that clear too.
Annie, I want to come back to you because one of the key things that you've raised and that the Royal Commission raised is obviously that aged care workers need a substantial pay rise. I just want to ask you, because the government is putting additional funding into aged care, I know it's not quite, you know, what the Royal Commission has demanded, for example, but why is it so important that aged care workers need a pay rise? And what is the effect of low pay and insecure work on workers and on people in care, essentially?
Obviously, a pay rise is critical, but it's interesting that the number one concern for our members, and so that is nurses and care workers across the sector, is their capacity to deliver the best care that they can, and that relates to minimum staff ratios. That's always number one, the minimum staff ratios, the requirement to have a registered nurse 24/7, and then wage increases is very important. Obviously, there's value for the work. So the work has just been consistently undervalued for years. And that is intrinsically related. It can't be separated to the fact that the workforce is largely female, about 90% female. And so those skills that are viewed as traditional caring skills are often invisible. It's not well understood what the knowledge levels and the skill levels that are required to deliver that work, the environment in which the work is conducted and the nature of the people that you're dealing with. Elderly people have a specific and unique set of conditions, health conditions, that require a different type of knowledge and set of skills as well. And those things, because it's largely delivered by females, there's just a gendered nature to how we view work, how work is valued and then therefore quantified. And so it's just seen as inherent that women will do that caring work. So that's why the ANMF with other unions currently has a work value case before the Fair Work Commission seeking a 25% wage increase. The other thing is that when you look at the current context of the aged care, the workplace environments, especially what's happened through COVID. I mean, it was already there before, but with COVID and the recent Omicron wave, and it's no coincidence that in almost 3.5 months, there's been more than 1,000 deaths just in residential aged care from COVID, more than the entire previous 2 years of the pandemic. That's after we've had time to learn and be equipped to deal with COVID. Those situations still persist. When you look at the context of what people are having to deal with and just the increasing burden in terms of both the physical demand, the emotional demand, and the sorts of ratios people are having to deal with currently, care workers having to look after 20 residents, Irene herself, I think, looks after 70 residents at night. It can be 100, or there might be no registered nurse at all. And then the added toll of having to bear witness to the effects of COVID directly on residents, but also the consequences of what COVID has caused in terms of delayed other health issues. People are, suffering from neglect because of the demands of COVID. The already stretched workforce can't respond to those demands. And so nurses leave. Of course they leave. They can go and work in a vaccination hub for 25% more. In some circumstances, senior registered nurses in the public hospital get paid 48% more than an equivalent senior registered nurse in an aged care facility. Why wouldn't they leave for that amount of money and much less responsibility? I know I'm giving you a very long-winded answer, but just one more little thing. Because we don't have the staffing and because we don't have registered nurses, when Richard's talking about how we use government funding, there's such an inefficient use of current government funding because we send way more aged care residents end up in hospitals when they shouldn't. Things could be treated in the nursing home if there were registered nurses and more staff around. But because we don't, they get sent to hospital. We could save, there's estimations of $800 million could be saved for the public health system by investing better in aged care.
Irene, I was going to ask you about the decisions you face without adequate resources.
Yes, I can respond to that. Because I'm one of those nurses that do work across all the shifts. So I do mornings, afternoons and night shifts, and each shift in itself presents different challenges. I just try to take advantage of avenues. I mean, we even had an unannounced accreditation agency visit the other day, and you try not to get emotive, and you want to try and highlight where you see the needs where we could get more support. But it comes down to what Annie said. It's like for years now we're just feeling understaffed, undervalued and underpaid. I mean, I'm finding myself feeling like I'm in a, well, I say this at work a lot, this is like a mini hospital. I mean, we've got people in and out of hospital a lot more. The residents have got a lot more comorbidities and problems. There'll be mental health, the mental health problems are more rife than ever. There's a real overlap in conditions. So you can't just be skilled in one particular area of nursing. You've got to have a whole raft of skills, because these things will crop up when you least expect it. You'll be in the middle of report and a couple of the people with a cognitive deficit will be knocking loudly on the door. They want something there and then. So the challenges are right from the moment we get in the door. It's like, right, who's going to go and see to them so we can get on with this? I just feel like we are so totally undervalued, and I get cross about the transparency of the government money. Yeah, I mean, it should have always been transparent where the money goes. It needs to go right to the coalface for decent staff so that we can get the dignity and respect of these residents met. You know, we're failing them as far as I'm concerned. We're trying to be almost like the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, trying to almost fix things as they happen. We should be able to have a bit of a preventative attitude there as well. But it's like, right, troubleshoot that problem, this problem. Okay, that one's jumped the queue. We better sort that one first. And, you know, I don't feel comfortable nursing like that. Our residents deserve more timely care. Yes, I can have an answer to all these bits and pieces that come up, but if you've got multiple things coming up at once because there's not enough of you to go around, you've got to triage like a hospital. What's the most important thing? You know, the person laying on their face on the floor, or that person needs their morphine injection right now. There's another one dying in another room. We've got multiple things all happening at the same time to have timely answers for. So, yes, we're stressed and stretched on a daily basis in our work, and it gets no easier. Staff resources, give me some. We need the staff resources like you wouldn't believe, and skilled staff while we're at it.
I can only imagine. Richard, coming back to you now, you know, we've heard there obviously about how important staff is in aged care facilities, and obviously the pay rise is one thing that's very much needed. But as we've said, all of this costs money. It requires government spending. But assuming that we do want older people to have dignified lives while they're in residential aged care or if they need care at home, what is required? What did the Royal Commission recommend in terms of, because they did try and answer that question of how it might be funded long term?
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's start at the beginning. They found clear evidence of catastrophic failure and said the only way to fix it is to put a lot more resources in. More resources would mean more staff, better paid staff, better trained staff. It's all about getting more money into the system to get more people with more skills to help. I mean, imagine being a nurse and having to choose between helping someone off the floor or giving someone the morphine they need. I mean, why as a society would we ever think the solution to that problem isn't to have more people there so that those choices aren't having to be made every shift? I mean, it's heartbreaking. Look, the Royal Commission, the commissioners actually kind of couldn't quite agree on how best to fund the extra resources. And while there was a big deal made of that in the media, I think it's important to understand that what we asked the Royal Commission to do was say, well, what's the problem and how do we fix it? How we fund it? Well, that's just politics. So that's the easy bit. Australia's one of the richest countries in the world. And in this year's budget, what the budget papers spell out is how we plan to spend $630 billion this year. Like, that's how rich we are. Elon Musk won't spend that much money in his lifetime. We spend that every year. So we're a very prosperous country with a very big government revenue and a very big government spending. Could be even bigger, but we got plenty of money there, so much that we can spend, quote, whatever it takes on nuclear submarines and spend $15 billion a year on tax cuts that they're not even controversial. So the Royal Commissioners kind of disagreed on whether we should increase the Medicare levy. And to be clear, the proposal was to increase it by 0.5%. Like 0.5%. So that could generate quite a lot of extra revenue, which we can then spend an extra tens of billions of dollars a year on aged care. Great, sign me up, I'd do that tomorrow. But the other Royal Commissioner said, no, it's just government, just collect the money and spend it. So to be honest, whether we have a dedicated levy or not isn't really the key issue. Breaking news, the Medicare levy doesn't fund Medicare. Like, we spend a lot more on health than we collect on the Medicare levy. Introducing the Medicare levy helped voters understand, yeah, I get this, we're going to put more in to get more out.
Mm.
But that's really not economics. There's no dedicated fund. This is just money. And we need a lot more of it so that we can employ a lot more people with a lot more skills to help, and we haven't even mentioned this today, the 100,000 people that can't even get into aged care.
Yeah.
Like, we know there are people who need it. If there were 100,000 people waiting to get into a hospital today, you know, there'd be an outcry. Well, the Royal Commission says there's 100,000 people waiting to get into this already stretched system.
Mm.
So, you know, that's why I talk about we just need to have a debate about the size of government, because we can't fix this problem by spending less on education. We can't fix this problem by spending less on public transport. We need a bigger public sector that puts more money into services like this. And we as citizens need to be proud of that.
Yeah.
And think, good, you know, I can go without a coffee this week. And, you know, all of our parents are better looked after. Sign me up.
Yeah. And just sticking with you, Richard, on that piece around increasing the pay of aged care workers. Annie was kind of talking there about, you know, if you're a senior registered nurse, you can go off and work for a vaccination clinic for, you know, 50% more pay. I mean, that's the economics at play, isn't it? That people won't stay in the sector, or they'll leave the sector, or they won't enter the sector if they can be better paid elsewhere.
This bit breaks my heart, because really we've built a system that relies on the empathy and compassion and generosity of spirit of aged care workers. And we know that a lot of them are staying there just because they want to help people, turning, you know, and choosing not to go and get more money for easier work somewhere else. How sick, how obscene. We should be rewarding people for doing this work rather than actually saving ourselves some money thanks to their generosity. I mean, what a contradiction of neoliberalism, you know, which assumes that everybody's greedy and selfish and self-interested, and we've built this neoliberal aged care system that's actually built on the generosity of wonderfully compassionate, hardworking people, most of whom are women. You know, to take advantage of that empathy and care and bank it as profit margin or bank it as lower government spending, I think it's obscene.
Mm. Annie, I might just come back to you to finish up. Obviously, we're have just seen the budget and we're in the middle of a federal election. How big of an issue do you think aged care is? We know a lot of people obviously work in the sector, but a lot of people have parents or relatives in the sector as well. Do you think this is going to be a big issue during the election?
We do. We think it is a top election issue. If not top three, then definitely top five. We've never had people speak about aged care so much before. Look, it's been a bit of a tragic path to get there. And while people don't know the detail of what's going on, everybody now knows there's something wrong in aged care. And I think just further to some of the discussion that's been had about how we fund it, and that, of course, I've heard, you know, we just choose not to fund it properly. We can, we just choose not to. And one of the key things for our members is if we just use the money that we had in the system firstly, because can I just tell you a little example of a registered nurse working in aged care from New South Wales just last week told me about not this federal budget, the last federal budget, there was a $10 increase to the basic daily fee given to aged care providers for their residents. No strings attached. That money was meant to support better food, better care, etc. In her facility, she occasionally has to shower residents with paper hand towels because there's not enough resources for towels and linen. There's no extra staff, no better food, but they build a deck out the back.
Mm.
So we think now that the community is much more aware of this and they want something done for their fathers and their mothers and their grandparents, and just so that we can call ourselves a better and decent society.
I guess that's the best place that we can leave this discussion, a better society for everyone and dignity for our older Australians. I want to thank our guests, Richard Dennis, Chief Economist of the Australia Institute, Irene McInerney, Registered Nurse from Tasmania who works in residential aged care, and Annie Butler, Federal Secretary of the Australian Nursing and Midwifery Federation. You can visit australiainstitute.org.au for all our latest research and content, and we're on Twitter at the Oz Institute with an AUS. My Twitter handle is ebony_Bennett with a double N double T. This episode was produced by Jennifer Macy, and you can find her at Jennifer Macy, with additional editing from Holly Forrest. Our theme music is by Jonathan McFeet from Pulse and Thrum, with additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Don't forget to leave us a review if you enjoy the podcast. It helps other people to find us. Stay safe out there, and thanks for listening. We have a special offer for Follow the Money listeners on Richard Dennis's new book, Big, The Role of the State in the Modern Economy. Despite decades of rhetoric to the contrary, Richard points out that taxes and government spending don't ruin the economy, they just reshape it. For 20% off Big, The Role of the State in the Modern Economy, just head to publishing.monash.edu, select Big, and enter the discount code AUSINSTITUTE20. That discount code again is AUSINSTITUTE20 when you check out Big at publishing.monash.edu. Buy your copy of Big today.